Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 43 degrees and mostly sunny skies. Today's Wednesday, April 18th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. Municipal Administrator Jim Dinley and Municipal Attorney Teresa Hillhouse received evaluations from the Sitka Assembly last night. The evaluations took place in closed session. Alaska law allows that unless those being evaluated want the session open. Neither Dinley nor Hillhouse did. After each evaluation, the meeting was open to the public. Mayor Cheryl Westover said Hillhouse's evaluation was satisfactory and that the assembly looked forward to working with her into the future. But Westover said because the city has not finalized its budget, Hillhouse would not receive a raise. She earns about $103,000. After Dinley's evaluation, Westover said the assembly discussed his strengths and areas where he could improve. She offered few details beyond that. Dinley is operating under a three-year deal that was renewed in January 2011. His annual salary is about $120,000. The entire process to evaluate both Dinley and Hillhouse took just over 3 hours. The assembly's next regular meeting is April 24th at Harrigan Centennial Hall. Petersburg officials want to remain in a legislative district with Sitka, and the city has filed a formal objection urging just that. In a 25-page brief against Alaska's latest redistricting plan, Petersburg attorney Tom Klinkner argues that the Alaska Redistricting Board, quote, failed to take the required hard look, close quote, at whether new legislative lines for Southeast Alaska complied with a state constitutional requirement that districts be compact. The new plan still has Petersburg sharing a newly created House district with Juneau. Klinkner updated the city council on the issue by phone Monday night in Petersburg.
Given the expedited schedule on which the court requested oppositions to be filed, I expect we'll have an early decision from the court on what it chooses to do about the new plan, which I'll report to you as soon as I hear about it. And from that point, depending on what the court decides, we're either it's either back to the board for further work or perhaps up to the Supreme Court again.
Petersburg lost a lawsuit against the original plan late last year and chose not to appeal, but a separate legal challenge from Fairbanks resulted in an Alaska Supreme Court ordered rewrite in March. The justices found that the board failed to meet requirements under the state constitution while trying to comply with the Federal Voting Rights Act. The court told the board to produce a new plan that first complies with state law and only then, quote, make revisions that deviate from the Alaska Constitution when deviation is the only means available to satisfy Voting Rights Act requirements. The board has since adopted a revision that changed election district boundaries for parts of the Aleutians and the interior, as well as areas around Nome and Bethel. It made no changes to its original plan for southeast lines. The revision is now back in Superior Court awaiting a judge's approval. According to Klinkner, Petersburg will not be the only party objecting. At a meeting earlier this month, Petersburg's mayor and councilors agreed to spend $20,000 to take the issue to the state Supreme Court this time, if necessary. $40 million of state funding could buy a gravel road linking Petersburg to Cake. That's the hope of State Senator Bert Stedman, who put the line item in the capital budget. The project has been on the drawing board for a long time and could become a reality if the governor approves the funding, but not everyone along the proposed route is excited about the idea. Matt Lichtenstein has an update.
Senator Bert Stedman wants an 18-foot-wide gravel road with turnouts alongside the proposed electrical intertie between Petersburg and Cake.
We're trying to get a corridor to move goods and services to Cake and out of Cake, and also be able to have our power lines that go to Cake, be able to be maintained along the road.
The State Department of Transportation has long pushed for a road to accompany the power line, except DOT planners have been pursuing a two-lane paved highway that's been estimated to cost as much as $160 million. The Federal Highway Administration is beginning work on an environmental impact statement, which is expected to consider several options for the road's design and route. Stedman and the DOT prefer the controversial northern route on northern Kuprinoff Island. It would require a brief shuttle ferry to cross the Wrangell Narrows to and from Petersburg. The road itself would run along the foot of Petersburg Mountain right through the small roadless city of Kuprinov, where Danatinas is mayor.
A number of our community members feel like it would irreparably change the character of the city of Kuprinov if there were to, you know, be a road coming through. And of course, it depends how far the road comes. Say that there was a road all the way to the state dock, for example, and vehicles could travel on it. What would that do to kids who climb Petersburg Mountain every year? It would just make it a very different experience.
The Kuprinov City Council has opposed a road in its community of about 30 residents. The northern route would continue roughly 51 miles to Cake on the northwest shore of Kuprinov Island. Cake Mayor Henrich Kadake has no preference for the route. He thinks the road would benefit his town by lowering the cost of goods and allowing local seafood to be shipped out fresh through Petersburg. But Kadake emphasizes that the electrical connection to Petersburg is the town's top priority, and he does not want it delayed by a road project.
Most of the city council and myself, we're not, you know, against the road, but we're not pushing it real hard because we don't want it to interfere with our intertide.
The economically struggling community of about 580 people is dependent on expensive diesel fuel for electricity. The new intertie from Petersburg would connect Cake to far cheaper hydroelectric power.
The sooner we can get cheaper energy, the better off we'll be. The economy should start stabilizing, and people, hopefully, we'll have people moving back home if we can get cheap energy here in Cake.
The Alaska Energy Authority and the Southeast Conference are working on that project, which is still in the environmental review stage. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The public can now comment on the city and borough of Juneau's petition to annex roughly 2,000 square miles of largely undeveloped land south of the current municipal boundary. The CBJ's petition was filed last November in response to the city of Petersburg, which has proposed forming a borough that includes the same area. The state's local boundary commission accepted Juneau's filing on April 9th, opening the public comment period. It lasts through June 28th. Brent Williams is a local government specialist for the state of Alaska and staff to the local boundary commission. He says the public comment period is the beginning of a several-month process before the commission issues a final decision early next year.
Once the comments are submitted, the staff will review all of them, and it will look at the standards and make a recommendation to the commission whether the petition meets the standards or not. Then we issue a report, and people get to comment on that report. We again look at those comments and consider them, write a final report, and then the commission will have a hearing.
Both Juneau and Petersburg claim economic and cultural ties to the region. Juneau-based native corporation Gold Belt, Inc. owns about 30,000 acres at Hobart Bay. The company opposes having the land incorporated into either community. A sold-out crowd of locals and visitors made Norwegian toasts, shared memories, and celebrated history during a centennial banquet for the Sons of Norway Hall in Petersburg last weekend. Friends at KFSK in Petersburg sent this audio postcard.
Sue Paulson here at the grand celebration for 100 years at the Sons of Norway. And I think, like many people in my age group, we have very happy memories of the great bazaars held here in the 1950s and the Christmas parties on, and, of course, then learning to dance and the wonderful dances at Sons of Norway Hall.
My real alias is Angel Lush, but I am Angela Christensen.
And you are a Viking of Valkyrie every year.
I have been since 1999.
And you grew up here. What's one of your favorite memories of the Sons of Norway Hall?
One of my most fondest memories of the Sons of Norway Hall would have to be when I used to learn how to Norwegian dance here. The days when we would come here and practice on these old wooden floors, which have been replaced, was some of the best memories. And dancing also for the cruise ships was one of my fondest memories because we got to share something every year. And it's just memorable, this hall.
Tell me a favorite memory or something you like the most about the Sons.
My name is Erin Funt, and probably dancing and people telling stories, because we tell stories after we run out of dances for the cruise ships. There's pretty funny stories that people will tell.
We are surrounded by history tonight. venerable building, the generations of these tables, this wonderful life in Petersburg. It's with respect for the pioneers and all who have preserved our hall that we celebrate 100 years on this occasion.
My name is Charles Harris. I've been here for almost 70 years, and used to come to the Sons of Norway Hall when I was a young fella and watched all the old-timers dance. And I can remember one time I was here, and Halvor Hjerdi, I can remember this to this day. He always asked the girls, "Do you want to dance or what?" And that was way back when. So that's all I can tell you about my memory of the Sons of Norway Hall.
This is Jill Williams. I'm president of the Sons of Norway this year in Petersburg. And growing up here, my very first memory is when I was so little, I had bells on my shoes so my mom could find out where I was, and it was during a bazaar, and I just remembered looking up and seeing all the pretty doilies and lace items that all the ladies had made. That's my very first memory of the Sons of Norway, down here running around in the hall.
John Bruce, the local tailor, and Louis Miller, too, they rounded up some workers, Norwegian strong and true. They had no fancy power tools, but those boys did it stall. In just 3 months, she stood there, the Sons of Norway Hall. No grand Seattle architect drove her graceful lines, and no computer models assisted in design. Yet her roof grew broad, expansive. Her halls rose high and wide, and through her many windows the sunlight came inside.
Would you join me in raising your glass to toast the 100th anniversary of Federlandet Lodge? We thank them for their dedication to keeping our Norwegian culture and heritage alive, and also for serving the community.
Those are some of the voices from the 100th anniversary banquet for the Sons of Norway Hall in Petersburg. Zone weather forecast today calls for cloudy, slight chance of rain, highs around 52. This is KCAW in Sitka.